Now, I am sure that the picture that I've given you in the prior two segments on why we teach history is startling for some of you and pretty far out for others, maybe for everybody. This idea of this Janus-like figure, the child who is sort of part plant, part human, as the physical and etheric bodies are so incorporated. And this idea that the memory forces are so powerful at this age that there is even the possibility that in a semi-conscious, very, very deeply dreamlike way, the child may here and there experience a recollection of a previous life. But I want to stress whether or not they do, those recollections, those memories are living there, and they are more accessible in fifth grade than at any other time in a human life. So this is a golden age in that respect of opportunity. However, it's one child in a million who would be able to do anything about it themselves. This is really the work that the teacher must take on. And it's one of these areas where, as Steiner says, the teacher is compelled to do the work of the angel. That the teacher has to do guardian angel work because the guardian angel is unable to intercede as deeply as we can in the physical world on the earth. And also, perhaps, Steiner didn't put it this way, but we could think of that expression, fools rush in where angels fear to go, or wise men, one or the other. And we don't want to be foolish about it, but we want to be aware and sensitive to what the children are doing. And I would say one way that the child will show you his or her strong connection to a given incarnation is that they suddenly develop this intense love of drawing something. You know, that a child wants to draw Krishna. He's not a good artist. He struggles with the human form. But he tries and tries and tries, and he draws a Krishna, which is light years beyond anything he's ever done before. And you watch as he's drawing it, and he's, you know, this easily distracted, rough and tumble guy. He's focused. He's really there. Or you see a girl who cannot draw the pyramids often enough, or cannot draw hieroglyphs frequently enough. And there again, you see this remarkable focus. And in the slideshow component of our history lectures here in the conference, I'll be showing you work which you will see very, very clearly what a deep connection one or another student has with this particular cultural epoch. Or a child will come up to you, it's happened to me more than once, in tears on a Wednesday or Thursday or Friday of the last week, let's say, of the Egyptian block. Please, please, can't we have another week? Please, please, can't we do this when we have our next history block? Are we going to do more Egypt? No, we're done. We're finishing a couple more stories. No, please, please, can't we have more? And of course I say, go to the library. And I feel horrible, like I'm denying this child the right that she has to finally finish that lifetime. But of course she's not the only one in the class. And of course I'll talk to her parents and encourage them to, you know, if she wants to remain immersed in this world, let her do it. And you will find your whole class, not everybody, but let's say two-thirds, three-quarters of the class, makes a connection, has a connection to a certain epoch. So I've taught often enough that I have had the class from India where they just were totally submerged in that Indian subcontinent and very hard to come up for air. They couldn't get enough of it and begged parents who had done Indian dancing to come and teach it to them or to play Indian music for them. Another class that was 99% Egyptian, and whose greatest memory of all their 8 years was the trip we took to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which of course I took with every class, but for this class, that trip to the Met's incomparable Egyptian collection was the high point of their childhood. Very, very interesting. And then another class that was completely Grecian and complained to me bitterly, why do we wait till the end of the year to study Greece? And we're never going to have enough time to finish it. And, you know, our class play is Greek and we don't know enough about the Greeks yet. And so very, very interesting how you see a whole group also, in a way, bears a kind of commonality of incarnation history. Okay, and those who have incarnated frequently, those who you feel really, really get deeply engaged in one or another period, Steiner often speaks of them. I'm not saying they definitely are, but very likely many of these children are the old souls, individuals who have incarnated often, who've been there and done that. And they've been part of this earthly continuum for a long time. And of course, if you want, you can go online and take my Steiner course, my Rudolf Steiner course, where I speak about reincarnation and karma from Steiner's point of view. And just to mention that the number of incarnations that Steiner says human beings have had is by no means in the millions or in the tens of thousands or in the thousands, probably not even in the hundreds. We actually, reincarnation is actually just one chapter in the extended history of human evolution. We have not really incarnated all that many times, and we are not going to continue reincarnating all that much longer in the grand scheme of things. So anyway, these old souls are those who've probably incarnated scores of times and have been in all of these periods. Okay, well and good. However, in a couple of lectures only, Steiner also spoke about another kind of human being who would begin to incarnate in great numbers in the 20th century. And he spoke particularly of the middle of the century. And he said, these are young souls. These are souls who may have never incarnated on the earth before. They're human beings, they have all the capacities and characteristics of human beings, but they have been waiting in the planetary realms, watching the Earth from afar, watching us like we go to the theater, or perhaps more to the point, like we go to the movies and just watch what's going on there and you know, get very moved by it. Maybe we're brought to tears or we burst into laughter, but we know it's only a movie. It's not us. And that has been their experience of all of these lifetimes. They have been watching their future classmates go through earthly life while they have remained in the cosmos, because they were not strong enough, they were not ready yet to come onto the earth until now. And they are like Miranda, who look upon the earth and say, oh, brave new world that has such creatures in it, to which her father Prospero says, this is of course in The Tempest, you're new here, what do you know? And that's what these children are like. And so the teaching of history has a very different effect on them than it does on the older souls. So the young soul is now, for the first time, going to have the experience of earthly history from the vantage point of the earth. This is very difficult to comprehend. It's one of these sort of things that Steiner throws at us from left field now and then. But I can't help but feel that one of the reasons that Waldorf schools came into existence at all was just because there were going to be all of these anomalies in incarnation. There are others as well, which I'm not going to go into in this conference anyway. But because there's going to be a different pattern in the way people are born and the kinds of souls that appear. What Steiner had to say about these young souls was that they would be very enthusiastic, they would be very open to everything on the earth in a loving, receptive way, but they would be completely devoid of social skills, and they would not have conscience. Because he said, conscience is something that can only develop on the earth. And indeed, he says specifically, conscience is something that can develop only in post-Christian lifetimes. So none of us, if we're thinking we're only born once every 1,000 years, maybe it's a little more frequent for all of us in this conference, but nonetheless, we haven't had much of a chance to develop it either. But we've had a few years' advantage over these young souls. So enthusiastic, open, but without social graces, without experience of the give and take and the recalcitrance of the mineral world and earthly life and all of that. And he said, in fact, they would often be considered crazy. And indeed, if not given the right guidance because they are lacking in conscience, they could also become psychopathic. They could become criminals. Doesn't that sound like a lot of the kids in your class? The likelihood is you may have one. I had a dozen, but I think most people only get one or none. It's not as though I want you to go on red alert about this and try to, you know, narrow down who's your young soul, but just that we are aware that they are there, and like all of the other children having major difficulties of one sort or another, they'll eventually find their way to a Waldorf school, maybe not your classroom, but maybe one of your colleagues, and you know, it'd really be good for faculties to read about this and talk about it. So that's another aspect of teaching history. As far as the older souls go, we are debriefing them. We are, in a certain way, really drawing from them the experiences that they've had in previous lifetimes. We are telling them, because these old souls can sometimes get a little bit jaded and a little bit cynical about earthly life. We are telling them, you have to keep returning because we haven't solved all the problems yet, because we haven't really figured out the final solution to human karma yet. We have to keep working at it. So they are given a reason to keep coming back. It really is a verification, an authentication of what they have been doing loyally, devotedly, returning to the earth again and again. And for the young souls, it's a briefing. It's catching them up. What's all the fuss about? You know, from the heavens, it didn't look that exciting. But wow, you guys really are enthusiastic about these myths and stories. So it's giving them a very new experience as well. And it's all played out in the social realm. It's played out in the interplay of the older and the younger souls in the class. And even if you're not getting souls who are just arriving for the first time, you certainly are getting some souls who may have not incarnated that frequently as opposed to those who have incarnated a lot. And all of this comes out in small ways and in large ways in the history classes that you have. So this is why they are truly of earth-shaking importance. Teaching children in all schools ancient history, ancient cultures, should be recognized as one of the most important goals of education. And instead, the Ahrimanic forces of our time are very dismissive of it. Ahriman doesn't like ancient history because it's all very luciferic, as we will learn. So he just as soon, all that we do is study, from when the first PC was invented. That's ancient history. And, consumer habits in the last 30 years or something like that. And probably that's the sort of thing children are going to be learning in years to come. But we hope not in the Waldorf school. So there you have a whole bunch of whys and wherefores about why we are teaching history, particularly in grade 5, because of the configuration of etheric and physical forces and the memory forces, and also the looking back that the child's etheric body is doing, longingly, perhaps wanting to just stay back in one historical period or another. And children will say this. Children will say this for the next few years. Oh, I wish I could be in ancient Egypt, or I wish we had a time machine. I'd love to go back to the Middle Ages. You get this, feeling. You've probably had this experience yourself. I'd love to be, a monk again in the Middle Ages. Gosh, I guess being a Waldorf teacher is basically the same thing. So, we know that too. But here, you can nip this in the bud. You can help the child take care of that past and move towards the future. Or the young soul, you can help them meet the earth and go towards the future as well. All right, now we'll go on to the what and then the how of teaching history in grade 5.